So I think you'll be going over the exam and the recitation last night, and they went through it for those who attended on Thursday as well. And the solutions are posted and all that. So hopefully we'll put this one behind us. There was a pretty wide range of scores on this one, so that's cause for concern, but it's the first exam. So let's talk today about a straight Fourier transform. And I think this lecture is a good example of how things are going to pick up a little bit now, because we're going to start building on top of the concepts that we covered in the previous section of the class. So the goal today is to teach you how to compute the Fourier transform of a discrete time signal. So I'll do a couple pages on theory, and then we'll work some problems to show you how all this works. But I wanted to introduce you a little bit to how we actually derive this transform, and show you that it's very analogous to what we did with continuous time signals. So let's assume x of n is a discrete time periodic signal. We want to represent it as a weighted sum of complex exponentials. So we'll write x of n is equal to the sum over k of c sub k e to the jk 2 pi over t times n. That angle bracket notation refers to the fact that that sum has to be done over one period of the signal. It can start anywhere in that period as long as it is a sum over exactly one period. We can derive an expression for the coefficients by using the property of orthogonal functions, which applies to complex exponentials above. We can write that if you integrate or sum a periodic function like this over its period, you get zero if k and n are not equal, and you get n if k is a multiple of n. 0, n, 2n, and so forth. So this is an orthogonality constraint that's very similar to what we saw with continuous time signals. So if we multiply both sides of this expression by e to the minus j 2 pi over n times n, we can write that we can write an expression for the sum of x of n as the sum over n, the sum over k of c sub k, e to the jk, 2 pi over n times n, times this e to the minus jr, 2 pi over n times over capital N times small n. And we can write this then as a double sum, just simply merging the two exponentials. So if we interchange order of summation on the right-hand side, and we pull the c sub k out, we can write this as the sum over k times c sub k times the sum over n of this e to the j k minus r construct. And we can show using this principle of orthogonality that the second sum on the right equals n if k is equal to r and equals zero otherwise. So that tells us then that this c sub k simplifies to 1 over n, because this goes away as either equal to n or equal to 0. So we have c sub k is equal to 1 over n times this thing. So this is a derivation of how we can compute the Fourier series coefficients for a discrete time signal. Given the signal, we use this summation to compute the coefficients. And the coefficients are completely analogous to the coefficients for a Fourier series. So here we have the closed form expression for the discrete time Fourier series. We have the synthesis equation, which describes how we represent x of n as a function of c sub k, and then we have the analysis equation, which describes how we compute the c sub k's. So the c sub k's are computed as the sum of over one period of x of n times this e to the minus j 2 pi, e to the minus jk times 2 pi over n times n. And we often write this as e to the minus jk omega 0 n, where omega 0 simply represents this 2 pi over n. And then, given the C sub k's, we can compute the x of n's by simply taking the sum of the C sub k's times e to the jk omega 0 n. And it's not uncommon then to actually to do this computation, but to truncate the C sub k's so that we can approximate x of n using a smaller number of the C sub k's. And we've talked about that a little bit throughout the course as a way to, for example, compress the signal or approximate the signal. Some other questions? So note that the DT Fourier, three-time Fourier series coefficients can be interpreted as in the CT case. They can be plotted as a function of frequency, where the frequency is k times omega zero. So we can plot these C sub k's as a function of frequency, where the frequencies are k times omega zero. And that tells us then that even in the discrete time case, a periodic signal has a line spectrum. It's got energy only at harmonics or multiples of the fundamental frequency. Now, as expected, this discrete time Fourier series obeys the same properties we have seen for the continuous time Fourier series and continuous time Fourier transform, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let's look at applying this discrete time Fourier series to non-periodic signals to produce what we call the discrete-time Fourier transform, or the DTFT. And then we'll do some examples with both of these. It actually turns out that these transforms, I know that the notation looks a little bit heavy, but these transforms are really easy to compute in the discrete-time case, especially in a tool like MATLAB. So you don't have to do any kind of symbolic integration or anything like that. You can just simply do these calculations. And in MATLAB, there's a very simple function that allows you to do that. So to apply this to aperiodic signals, we're going to use an approach and completely analogous to what we did in a continuous time case. We're going to extend, do a periodic extension of the signal, and then let the period go to infinity. So let's assume that x of n is some aperiodic signal of finite duration, whatever it may look like, but it's got a finite duration. It extends from minus n1 to plus n2. We can define a periodic extension of x of n, which we're going to call x tilde of n. That's just x of n over one period, and then we repeat that. So x tilde of n is equal to x of n over one period, and then it's just a periodic function. And then we can note that x tilde of n converges to x of n as n goes to infinity. This was the same thing we did in the case of continuous time signals. So we can apply the complex Fourier series to x tilde of n, and we can write the sum from k is equal to minus n over 2 to plus n over 2 of c sub k e to the j k omega 0 n, where omega 0 is 2 pi over t. And we can compute the coefficients as the sum from 1 over n, from minus n over 2 to plus n over 2, of x tilde of n e to the minus j k omega 0 n. And in this case, we can write that as the sum from minus n1 to n2, for example, since it's 0 otherwise. And so what we're going to do is we're going to define x of e to the j omega as 1 over n times the sum from n equals minus infinity to plus infinity of x of n e to the minus j k omega 0 n. Remembering that x of n is just, that's what we started with. X tilde of n is the periodic extension of x of n, but we're doing this sum only over the values that x of n is non-zero. So we can write this summation as this summation, because x of n is essentially zero for all values outside of that range. So this definition is going to be what we call Fourier transform. And we note that it's periodic with period 2 pi. If you plot this function as a function of omega, you will see that it cycles every 2 pi. And this implies that our coefficients, C sub n, are just 1 over n times this thing evaluated at k omega 0. So these are just evenly spaced samples of our definition for x of e to j omega. So we can put these two things together. And we can derive an inverse transform and then end up with our Fourier transform equation. So we can take x tilde of n as the sum over k of 1 over n x of e to jk omega 0 times this e to the jk omega 0. And for and we can so we can write 1 over 2 pi here and put a 2 pi over here. We can take this 1 over n and put it here. We can write this in this form. And we note that this 2 pi over n is just omega 0. So we can further just write this as this sum times omega 0. And then as we let n go to infinity, this x tilde of n approaches x of n, and omega 0 approaches the 0, and the sum of omega 0 approaches the integral of omega 0. So that gives us then an expression for our synthesis equation, which is that x of n is equal to 1 over 2 pi. The sum becomes an integral. We have the integral of x of e to the j omega, e to the j omega, n d omega. So these two equations are what we call our discrete time Fourier transform. Now, what I want to do today is to focus on this equation, which expresses the Fourier transform for discrete time signals as a sum of x of n times e to the minus j omega n. This integral equation is a little more intimidating because we have to integrate this function over from 0 to 2 pi. So we won't dwell on this too much, but this is the main result today, that this is how you get a continuous function of frequency for a discrete time signal. So there are a couple things to recognize here. First, if you recall the difference between the Fourier series and the Fourier transform, what was the difference between the Fourier series and the Fourier transform when we talk about the spectrum of a signal?
The spectrum was continuous instead of just peaks at fundamentals.
Right. So the Fourier series is applied to what type of signal?
Periodic.
And the spectrum is a line spectrum. The Fourier transform was applied to an aperiodic signal, and then we eventually generalized it to periodic, but it was introduced as being applied to aperiodic signal, and we got a continuous function of frequency. But we have the same kind of deal here, that for a discrete time signal that's aperiodic, we get a continuous function of frequency. Even though the signal is discrete, the function of frequency is a continuous function of frequency. And for a periodic discrete time signal, we get a line spectrum, which we discussed previously as the discrete time Fourier series. And I'll put the question in just a second. Note that the dt, ft, and the inverse dft, dt, ft are not symmetric. We have a summation in one case and an integration in the other case. And that's a little bit cumbersome, but that's, you know, sort of the way it works out. The signal x of n is aperiodic, and hence the transform is a continuous function of frequency. And this function is periodic with 2 pi. Now, later, we're going to relate this to sample frequency and show that we can actually use this property to simplify the computation significantly. But for the moment, we just know that it's periodic with period 2 pi. And when we talk about the sampling theorem later in the course, this will make sense.
In the synthesis equation, you're integrating, and are you integrating a discrete time signal?
No, so for the analysis equation, this is a signal which is discrete.
Right.
So we sum it.
Okay.
This is a continuous time function.
Of frequency.
Of frequency. So for the synthesis equation, we integrate a continuous time function of frequency.
Okay.
So it's a little bit asymmetric, as we said.
I guess it becomes continuous because e to the minus j omega n is continuous.
Well, I mean, it becomes continuous because if we take the limit here and all that, but I think from a practical point of view, the signal is still a aperiodic signal. And discrete time signals are actually a special case of continuous time signals. So there's no reason the spectrum shouldn't be continuous time, even in the discrete case.
Okay.
Now, most of the time in the discrete case, we're going to deal with... We're going to sort of assume periodicity. We're going to talk about discrete. We're going to talk about the fast Fourier transform and talk about essentially sampling this function at multiples of a frequency related to the sample period and the window length and all that. We'll get to that. Most of the time in the discrete world, when you deal with the spectrum in tools like MATLAB, you're going to deal with a vector of samples that represents a sampling of this function. Because dealing with continuous time functions in MATLAB is not the easiest of things to do. Even though with the symbolic toolboxes, you can do it now. So if you've ever noticed, for example, when you look at the graphic equalizers on your laptops, they're always plotting things in terms of line spectrum. And that's because those are generated from a transform that's sampled at a fixed number of points. Is there another question? Okay, so that's enough of the theory, because I know that the math is a little bit cumbersome. But it's actually really easy to compute these things in practice. So let's look at a couple of simple cases. Let's look at first the unit pulse. X of n is equal to delta of n. And now we're going to compute the Fourier transform of this signal. So our first observation is this a periodic or an aperiodic signal? It's aperiodic, right? So it should have a spectrum which is a continuous function of frequency. So we're going to apply the discrete time Fourier transform. We're going to take x of e to j omega is equal to the sum from n equals minus infinity to plus infinity of x of n e to the minus j omega n. Well, x of n is just delta of n, so we have the sum from n equals minus infinity to plus infinity of delta of n e to the minus j omega n. What do we know about delta of n as a function of n? It's only 1 when n is equal to 0. So this summation just simplifies to the value when n is equal to 0, and e to the 0 is equal to 1. E to the j 0 is equal to 1. So we just have 1. So the spectrum of this discrete time pulse is a constant, flat, value of 1, which means it has a very wide frequency response, much like we saw in the analog case when we had the Fourier transform of delta of t was flat. Okay, so that's our first example. Next, let's look at what happens when we time delay this pulse. Now, in the continuous time case, when we time delayed a signal, what did that do to its Fourier transform?
Phase shift?
It just introduced a phase shift. So we would expect the same thing here. If we take x of n is equal to delta of n minus n0, we have x of e of j omega is equal to the sum from n equals minus infinity to plus infinity of x of n e to the minus j omega n. This is the sum of delta of n minus n0 e to the minus j omega n. When is this thing non-zero? When n is equal to n0. So we just get e to the minus j omega n0 for x of e to the j omega. Now, when I take the magnitude of this, I get the magnitude of x of e of j omega. Well, that's just the magnitude of e to the j something, which is equal to 1. When I take the angle of x of e of j omega, this is just the angle of e to the minus j omega n0, which is just minus omega n0. So again, we see the time delay produces a phase shift which is linearly proportional to frequency. And we also know that this function is periodic over the range minus pi to pi. So we get the same result, essentially, that we got in the continuous time case. Now, we can try to step up one more and go to x of n is equal to a unit step function, u of n. However, this is not a time-limited function, so it has no dTFT in the ordinary sense, because the sum from n equals minus infinity to plus infinity is not going to converge. However, it can be shown that the inverse of this function is a unit step, so we can actually sort of finesse this a little bit. I won't go through the details here, but we can write that the Fourier transform of a unit step is a function 1 over 1 minus e to the minus j omega 0 plus pi times delta of omega. And the way we get this is somewhat similar to what we did with the generalized Fourier transform. We won't dwell on that today, but what we will work in a moment or later is what happens when this is time limited. Good question?
I was curious why the spectrum is periodic over negative pi to pi. Is it because of the e to the j omega?
Yeah, the e to the j omega is periodic. E to the j omega itself is a function which is periodic. Right, so it might not appear that way from this equation, but we have to remember where this came from. Yeah.
With the summation of the unit step being non-convergent, like, why does that have any effect on whether or not it has a discrete time Fourier transform?
Like, because you need this for this thing to be bounded. You need this thing to be bounded. So if you plug in u of n here, you get the sum from 0 to infinity of 1 times e to the minus j omega n, and that just goes on and on. Doesn't converge.
Well, I mean, yeah, I understand that it doesn't converge, but like, why does that make a difference that it doesn't converge?
Well, because if you strictly applied this definition, the spectrum would be infinite. You have infinite values at all frequencies.
Okay.
And that's not actually the case. So we have to use a little bit of a trick. And when we do that, the details of this, I think, are in the book. But we won't really dwell on this, but we can actually show that if you take the inverse transform of this function, you'll end up with u of n. And there's several ways to arrive at this, but it's essentially you arrive at this by looking at the transform of the exponential and then letting the slope of the exponential go to be constant. So anyway, don't worry about this too much right now, because I just wanted to point out that there is a way to define a transform for u of n. Okay, so let's look at and one way to get there is to actually take this function and let the rate of decay go to zero. But let's look at this case. This is a little more interesting case. So we have an exponential decay. We have a signal a to the n u of n. This is going to be the equivalent of our units of our e to the minus alpha t signal in the continuous time case. E to the minus alpha t, if you remember, had a spectrum which had a low pass filter type characteristic associated with it. And this a to the n u of n is essentially the equivalent of that. So let's first compute its Fourier transform. We can take the sum from n equals minus infinity to plus infinity of x of n e to the minus j omega n, and that gives us the sum of a to the n e to the minus j omega n from 0 to infinity, because we have a u of n here. So this is the sum from 0 to infinity of a e to the minus j omega, that quantity raised to the nth power. And if you pull out your handy table of summations, which we'll provide you with as we work these problems, you know that this summation can be written as 1 over 1 minus this constant term. So x of e of j omega is equal to 1 over 1 minus a e to the minus j omega. That is the Fourier transform, the discrete time Fourier transform of this exponentially decaying signal. Now, there are a couple interesting implications of this. Let's look at the magnitude of this function as a function of frequency. So we can take the magnitude of 1 over 1 minus a e to the minus j omega, and as you may recall, to get the magnitude of a complex number, you can we can write this as its real part plus its imaginary part, just expanding this e to the minus j omega. And then we can take 1 over the square root of the sum of the squares of these. So we get 1 over 1 minus a cosine omega quantity squared plus a sine omega quantity squared. Now, it's very common with these transforms, when you're trying to work them analytically, to use some trig relations, because we end up with these cosines and sines often. So we can actually expand this as 1 minus 2 times a times cosine omega plus a squared cosine squared omega plus a squared sine squared omega. And we know that we can write this as 1 minus 2 times a times cosine omega, and then this cosine squared plus sine squared times a squared, that's just 1, so we can write this as a squared. So the magnitude of x of e j omega is equal to 1 over the square root of 1 minus 2 times a times cosine omega plus a squared. And that function, as we'll show, I think I have a plot on the next page, has a low pass frequency characteristic associated with it. So, for example, if we look at the value at omega is equal to 0, we can write that as 1 over 1 minus the square root of 1 minus 2 times a times cosine of 0 plus a squared, and that can be written as 1 minus 2 times a plus a squared, 1 over the square root of 1 minus a squared, or just 1 over 1 minus a. So we can go ahead and plot that. For omega equal to 0, the peak is 1 over 1 minus a. We can then evaluate at a value of omega equal to pi, because remember we said it's periodic from 0 to 2 pi or from minus pi to pi. So we can evaluate it at pi, plug in the value of pi, and we can show that we get 1 over 1 plus a. So we can then plot this value as 1 over 1 plus a. And you can then go ahead and fill in the points in between, and if you do, you'll get a sort of a raised cosine shape that looks something like that. So this is what our for the magnitude as a function of frequency looks like. It's periodic, and we can plot from minus pi to pi. Now, this is the case when a is greater than or equal to 0. When a is less than 0, what happens to this function when a takes on a negative value? Well, let's say we have minus 0.5 to the n. When n is equal to 2, we're going to get a positive number. When n is equal to 4, we're going to get a positive number. When n is equal to 6, and so forth. When n is equal to 1, we're going to get minus 0.5. When n is equal to 3, we're going to get minus 0.5. raised to the third power. So that function is going to alternate between positive and negative values and still have this exponential decay associated with it. Now, how do you think the frequency response of this function differs from this function?
Is it twice? All the points are twice.
So, just qualitatively, generally speaking, which of the two functions should have more high frequency content?
The bottom one,
right? Because there's more rapid changes. So in fact, if we plot this for the case where A is less than zero, if we actually evaluate this function for the case where A is less than zero, you'll get this plot. It's sort of an inverse of this. It takes on a minimum at omega is equal to zero, and it takes on a maximum at omega is equal to pi. So it goes from being a low-pass filter to a high-pass filter, or low-pass shape. So, you know, these are not too difficult to do as long as you get your math straight, but again, we've got tools like MATLAB that automate a lot of this. So the setting up the equation is the most important thing, and then we can use MATLAB to crunch through the details. Now, let's look at another important signal. Let's look at a time-limited pulse, H of n, and we'll call it H of n just because we want to relate this to systems. So we have a pulse which is non-zero from minus n1 to plus n1. So if we go ahead and take the Fourier transform, we have the sum from minus n1 to plus n1 of e to the minus j omega n. And if you have a good set of summation tables, we can write this as a finite sum of some constant raised to the nth power. And we'll see, we've got a solution for that, is sine omega n1 plus 1 half over sine omega over 2. This just comes from a table of summations. Now that's kind of interesting because if we plot this function as a function of frequency, we get a plot which looks something like this. It has the sine x over x shape, and it has an amplitude that decays, but it's of course periodic with period 2 pi. So the frequency response of a time-limited pulse is effectively a low-pass filter because it's got that low-pass shape. And this type of filter, therefore, if this were the impulse response of a system, we would call this a finite impulse response filter. In the continuous time case, we obtain a sine x over x function for the same kind of signal. So we see that the two results are very similar. This is very close to a sync function, but it's periodic in frequency. Now, let's see if we can if we can do an inverse. So now we have a transform, H of E of J omega, and we'd like to compute H of N that corresponds to this by applying our inverse Fourier transform equation. So we're going to take 1 over 2 pi times the integral from minus pi to pi of this function. Well, we can write that as the integral from minus omega sub c to plus omega sub c of 1 times e to the j omega n d omega, and that actually will turn out to be sine omega c, omega sub c times n over pi n, if you work through the details of this. Now, the interesting thing about this is if we plot this h of n as a function of n, we get a plot which looks like this. It has the sine x over x shape, but it has values for both minus n and plus n. So this kind of a signal, if this is the impulse response of a linear time invariant system, is the system causal or non-causal? And I mean, you can obviously read here, but you know, I'm going to ask you why, so. So if this is the impulse response, is this system causal? Well, think about the implications of that when I do convolution. If I have non-zero values here, what happens when I flip this signal to do convolution? What? Well, but I'm going to get, let's focus just for the moment on these samples here. If I flip this and I do convolution, I'm going to get these values over here, right? And as I'm sliding this thing along, the values over here are going to do what? They're going to reach into the future. and produce an output at time now, which is dependent on things in the future. So whenever the impulse response is non-zero for n less than zero, the system is non-causal. We showed that actually earlier in the semester, but we haven't emphasized that yet. So ideal low-pass filters are non-causal. This is why you simply can't go into Radio Shack and buy one of these.
So that's the same for the other example? For the continuous time?
Yeah, continuous time and discrete time, same deal. Now, the wonderful thing about digital systems are we can simulate this by simply adding delay to the system. We can buffer up our data and add delay. And that's why most digital systems that you see implemented are actually non-causal, because they all buffer data. And by doing that, you can then sort of go backwards and forwards in time. And that all works fine, except when there's a transmission problem and your audio track gets out of sync with your video track. And then you see some examples of that where people's mouths are moving before you're hearing the words and things like that. Now, we've talked and we'll continue talking this semester about the fact that all of these transforms we're going to talk about are essentially linear operations. And therefore, there are certain properties that they obey. And we want to continue to understand these transforms by looking at their behaviors on some very fundamental properties, because all these properties are important to us as engineers, for example, linearity. So one of the differences between the discrete-time Fourier transform and the continuous-time Fourier transform is that the discrete-time Fourier transform is periodic with a period of frequency, if you will, of 2 pi. Now, again, later we'll see that's a consequence of the sampling theorem and digital signals, but we'll get to that eventually. But for the moment, let's just note that one major difference between the CTFT and the DTFT is that with the DTFT case, your transform is periodic with period 2 pi. However, other properties like linearity apply, because if we take A times X of n plus B times Y of n, well, it's easy to show, since the transform is defined in terms of a summation, it's fairly easy to show that the sum of two things is just the individual sum, so we can very easily show that this is the case. We showed time shifting for an impulse function was equivalent to multiplication by a phase shift. There's a similar version of this called frequency shifting, where if we multiply by e to the minus j omega 0 n, that's equivalent to shift in frequency. So we can actually do modulation of a signal in discrete time. And in fact, that's one of the things that the new digital radios do. The digital software radios actually do a lot of the modulation stuff in discrete time space. And it's easier to do that than to have to build analog electronics to do that. So, as an example, if we have y of n is equal to e to the j pi n times x of n, this, just applying this principle, we have e to the j pi n is just minus 1 to the n power times x of n. And we could, in fact, we would expect that the implications of this in the frequency domain would be a phase shift, because here with omega 0 equals pi. So here we have, if this is our original signal and we modulate it by this e to the j pi n, that's effectively going to shift it in frequency by an amount minus pi. So we're going to go from a spectrum that looks like this to a spectrum that looks like this. Now, because this spectrum is periodic, it's essentially going to do what we call a circular shift. So this piece gets shifted here, but this piece gets shifted here, so we end up with a composite that looks something like this. And the effect of doing this is to actually take a low pass, a signal which has a low frequency characteristic, and turn it into a signal that has a high frequency characteristic. So we'll make use of this fact later when we want to transform low pass filters to high pass filters. We'll show a very simple way to do that by simply changing the signs of the coefficients. Now, some additional properties that we're interested in are that we've seen with our other transforms are time reversal. If I time reverse the input signal x of n, that has the effect of multiplying omega, essentially flipping the sign on omega. So the Fourier transform of x of minus n is just x of e to the minus j omega. Everywhere where you have an omega, you replace that with the minus omega. We also have some symmetry functions. If x of n is real, we can note that x of, if we take the conjugate of x of e of j omega, that's equal to x of e to the minus j omega. So there's what's called conjugate symmetry. If x of n is real, we can note that the relationship between the conjugate of the spectrum and this x of e to the minus j omega. Now, the implication of this might not seem clear from there, but the implication of that is that when you have real signals, when you have a signal that is a real value, it's what we saw with the Fourier transform. What does the magnitude spectrum look like? If this signal is real, is the magnitude spectrum an even or odd function?
Even,
good. That's something we haven't talked a lot about yet, but we're going to start making use of that. And the same is true for a discrete time signal. If the signal if the signal is real, the magnitude spectrum is real. Whereas if the signal is complex, then you don't get the symmetry. And that's actually a byproduct of this. So what we can show is that if the signal is real, the magnitude of x of e of j omega and the real part of x of e of j omega are actually even functions. And the angle of x of e of j omega is an odd function. If x of n is real and even, its Fourier transform is real and even, and if it's real and odd, its Fourier transform is imaginary and odd. And those are the same results we got for the continuous time phase. We also have differentiation in frequency. So if I differentiate in frequency, that's equivalent to multiplication by n in the time domain. We use this on the exam. We had t e to the minus alpha t, and that was the way to derive a transform for that. A Parseval's relationship holds. If I sum the signal in the time domain, that's equivalent to integrating the square of the signal in the square of the transform in the frequency domain. And most importantly, convolution holds. If I convolve x of n and h of n, I simply multiply the discrete time Fourier transforms. So let's make use of that. Check some. let's make use of that to derive, to sort of show how this works with the Fourier transform. If x of n is equal to e to the j omega 0 n, we can write that x of e of j omega is equal to 2 pi times the sum from k is equal to minus infinity to plus infinity of delta of omega minus omega 0 minus 2 pi k. This is a transform here. We didn't derive this, but it can be easily shown that this is the case. So why the output, if I take now this signal, if you remember we talked about this as an eigenfunction, if I take that and apply it to some linear time invariant system, I can multiply the transforms of the two, and I can then move this inside the summation, and I can note that the multiplication of this with this function just produces h of e to the j omega 0. So the result of this operation is that I get y of n is equal to h of e to the j omega 0 times e to the j omega 0 n. So if I apply e to the j omega 0 n to a linear time invariant system, what I get out is essentially that same function weighted by the transform evaluated in omega 0. We saw this in the case of continuous time systems, and now the same is true for discrete time systems. And this forms the basis then for, this is why we build Fourier transforms out of these functions. Because when you apply them to linear time invariant systems, you essentially get that same function out. So it's sort of it's a nice demonstration of this. You don't have to worry about this if you don't catch all the details, but remember that when you apply periodic signals to linear time invariant systems, you get out periodic signals. And the only thing that's different is the amplitude and the phase. You don't get other frequency components or anything like that. So what we've done today is we've introduced the discrete time Fourier transform and shown that it's analogous to the continuous time Fourier transform. And then we've worked several examples, and then we went through some of the properties associated with the discrete time Fourier transform. And most of these properties are identical to the properties that you've seen for continuous time Fourier transform. We've talked about the discrete time Fourier transform for aperiodic signals and the discrete time Fourier series for periodic signals. Now, what we're going to do next class is to show you that we can exploit the symmetry of the discrete time Fourier transform to develop an algorithm which allows us to compute this very quickly, and that's known as the fast Fourier transform, or FFT. And you might have seen this terminology. FFT is used quite a lot when you look at any of these audio tools that are displaying graphic equalizers in real time, or nice little pretty pictures where, you know, fractals and all that stuff. They're invariably using FFTs in real time to generate that information. The FFT was a very significant advance when it was introduced because it allowed us to compute things much, much faster than before, and it made a whole lot of things possible in the 70s and early 80s when we didn't have a lot of compute power. Okay. See you on Friday.